In commercial real estate right now, debt is basically a pair of lead boots, and cash is a pair of lightweight sneakers.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you just imagine a high-stakes game of musical chairs, the music is playing, the chairs are getting scarce, and the players relying on expensive bank loans just cannot move fast enough. They're totally weighed down.
Yeah, they're stuck.
Right. Meanwhile, the players with pure, unencumbered cash are just gliding across the floor, taking their pick of the best spots in the room.
The mechanics of who can actually close a deal have just completely flipped over the last few quarters. Sellers are demanding certainty now, and a finance offer, it just simply does not carry the weight it used to.
It really doesn't. And welcome to this deep dive, by the way. Today, we're partnering with Eureka Business Group to look at the absolute latest intelligence on commercial real estate.
Yep.
Our focus today is specifically on positioning Eureka Business Group as your go-to authority for retail CRE in the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
The DFW market is just fascinating right now, too.
It really is. So we're looking at a stack of sources covered the week ending July 3, 2026. This includes national capital markets data, institutional transaction reports, and some hyperlocal Texas development news.
So we've got a lot to get through.
A ton. The mission today is to cut through the noise, figure out exactly where retail capital is flowing, unpack why necessity-based assets are dominating, and really determine what these economic signals mean for retail landlords and 1031 exchange investors down in Texas.
Right, because to understand why certain Texas retail properties are trading at premium valuations, I mean, we first have to establish the baseline economic
A
conditions.
macro picture.
Exactly. The entire market right now is being dictated by the cost of capital and specifically the Federal Reserve's posture.
So let's talk about the Fed. They held rates at 3.50% to 3.75% in June. But looking at the sources, what really rattled the market was their dot plot.
Yeah, the dot plot was a shock.
It turned incredibly hawkish. I mean, they're implying we might actually see another rate hike, which completely upends the whole narrative that cuts were right around the corner.
That hawkish signal is exactly what creates those lead boots you mentioned for levered buyers. When the Fed signals a higher for longer environment, it bakes negative leverage straight into the system.
Explain how that works for the listener, just practically.
Well, if you're looking at an asset with a, say, 6.5% cap rate, but your borrowing cost is sitting up at 7.5% or 8%, your debt is literally destroying your cash on cash return.
Right, you're losing money on the spread.
Yeah, the math simply does not pencil for syndicators or highly levered funds. But, and this is the key, if you are a 1031 exchange investor sitting on cash from a previous sale, you bypass the debt markets entirely.
You're wearing the sneakers.
You're wearing the sneakers. You have a massive structural advantage because you are immune to that negative leverage.
And the stress of that expensive debt is showing up very clearly in the data we're looking at. I mean, the TREP CMBS delinquency rate for retail saw the largest increase of any property type in June,
Yeah, jumping 30 basis points to 6.91%.
which is wild. And yet, single-tenant net lease cap rates, they're sitting at 6.80% overall, with retail specifically at 6.55%. And that's according to the Q1 Boulder Group benchmark.
A delinquency spike to nearly 7% means lenders are heavily scrutinizing their retail exposure. Bank committees are getting incredibly conservative right now.
They're looking for any reason to say no, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you try to finance a retail acquisition today, the underwriter is going to put every single tenant lease on a microscopic level of review. They are looking for literally any excuse to pull term sheets.
Okay, so let's unpack a glaring paradox in our sources,
Yeah.
because the consumer data is sending completely mixed signals.
It's all over the place.
Right. On one hand, May retail sales actually rose 0.9%, which beat expectations, and core sales are up nearly 7% year over year. But then, on the other hand, the June Consumer Confidence Index just plummeted down to 91.2. I mean, that is the lowest June reading in over a decade. So are consumers happily spending, or are they terrified?
You really have to separate nominal spending from consumer psychology here. Top-line sales look robust, primarily because of inflation in non-discretionary category.
So it's just costing more to live.
Exactly. People are spending more because groceries and basic necessities cost more. But if you look at the underlying metrics in that consumer confidence report, the jobs hard to get sentiment just hit a 5.5-year high.
I saw that 22.5%, right?
Yeah. Consumers are employed today, but they are incredibly anxious about their future income.
So they're swiping their credit cards for milk and eggs, but they are holding off on buying a new TV or, going out for a high-end dinner.
Precisely. And this bifurcation is the compass for the entire CRE market right now. Investors and lenders, they know that discretionary spending collapses when job anxiety peaks. You just cannot underwrite a center heavily weighted toward luxury goods or expensive hobbies in this kind of environment. The capital is flocking to daily needs because that cash flow remains insulated, even if the consumer pulls back.
And the data shows Wall Street capital pivoting into necessity retail at a just staggering scale. I mean, according to JLL's Grocery Tracker 2026, grocery-anchored transaction volume hit nearly $11 billion in 2025.
That's up 42% year over year.
42%.
Yeah.
And the institutional share of those purchases is at a decade high, 27%. I mean, we're seeing a TPG-led investor group acquire Echo Realty and its 230 grocery-anchored centers for roughly $2 billion.
It's massive. And you also see it in the discount and pharmacy space, too.
Right, like the Family Dollar deal.
Exactly. JLL and GA Group just brokered a $75 million sale leaseback for a 46-property Family Dollar portfolio across 19 states.
Wow.
And pharmacy credit is finally stabilizing. After a really brutal wave of industry closures, CVS is reversing its contraction and actively planning 60 new openings.
Okay, I have to challenge this strategy for the private listener, though.
Here for it.
Because grocery-anchored retail seems to have become the U.S. Treasury bond of commercial real estate. It's super safe.
Very safe.
But if institutions are flooding this space,
yeah,
and they're compressing cap rates down to the, 5.25% to 5.8% range for top-tier centers, how does a local buyer or a 1031 exchanger avoid getting squeezed out? I mean, it feels like fighting a tidal wave.
Well, you don't fight the tidal wave. You fish in different waters.
Okay, I like that.
Private capital simply cannot compete with a $2 billion TPG fund for a 200-property portfolio, nor should it even try. The opportunity lies in the $3 million to $10 million sub-tier of necessity retail.
Because it's too small for the big guys.
Exactly. Institutional funds have a minimum deployment threshold. It's totally inefficient for them to underwrite a $5 million neighborhood strip center. But for a private investor, especially one sitting on unencumbered cash, that sub-tier offers yields that Wall Street is just leaving on the table.
Which brings the conversation straight into the backyard of Eureka Business Group. Let's look at how this demand for necessity retail is playing out in Texas, and specifically the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
The DFW numbers are wild.
They really are. The occupancy numbers are striking. DFW retail occupancy just hit a record 95.3% on 202 million square feet of inventory, according to Weitzman.
A 95.3% occupancy rate in a market that size indicates a severe structural supply constraint relative to the population growth.
We just don't have enough buildings.
We are simply not building enough retail space to accommodate the inward migration to the Sun Belt.
But wait, explain the math on the Ayers management deal for me. Because Ayers is acquiring Houston-based Whitestone REIT for $1.7 billion.
Right.
And they are paying a 26% premium. In an environment where debt is this punishing and negative leverage is destroying returns, how on earth does paying a 26% premium for suburban Texas retail make financial sense? Are they just blindly betting on Sunbelt migration?
Not blindly at all. They are buying the ability to aggressively mark rents to market.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Whitestone owns highly localized, necessity-based neighborhood centers. Because DFW and Houston are sitting at historically tight occupancies, landlords essentially hold all the pricing power.
So when a lease expires?
When those legacy leases roll over, Ares knows they can bump those rents by 20%, 30%, or even more.
Because the tenants literally have nowhere else to go.
Exactly. They're looking past the current cost of debt and underwriting the compounding rent growth that really only happens in a structurally constrained market.
We're also seeing significant physical expansions validating this growth. Costco is opening two new Texas warehouses this summer.
Sam's Club just set a grand opening date for a new mega store in Waxahachie, too.
Right, and down in the Hill Country, HGB bought 44 acres near a new Buc-ee's in San Marcos, which is essentially land banking a future node of commerce.
You know, these big box developments are incredibly expensive to build. Operators like Costco and HEB run exhaustive predictive models on traffic patterns and income density before they move a single scoop of dirt.
So they aren't guessing.
No, no. When they plant a flag in a place like Waxahachie or San Marcos, they are telegraphing to the entire real estate industry that this corridor is about to explode.
So if you're a private investor listening to this, and you obviously cannot buy the Costco itself, what is the play?
The play is capturing the spillover.
Okay.
These megastores act as trade area gravity wells. They pull tens of thousands of vehicles to that specific intersection every single week.
Right. Everybody needs groceries.
Exactly. Your strategy should be acquiring the shadow-anchored retail nearby. You want the unanchored strip center across the street, or, you know, the quick service restaurant pad on the out parcel.
Because the big box brings the traffic to you for free.
Fundamentally, permanently alters the neighborhood's traffic patterns, virtually guaranteeing secondary leasing demand for the smaller properties surrounding it.
And private capital is moving aggressively to capture this value.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the market at City Park in Houston. It was a fully leased service in QSR Center. It closed to a 1031 all-cash buyer in under 40 days.
40 days is incredibly fast.
It is. And in the DFW area, Prudent Growth acquired Scenic Square in Rowlett, which is a service and medical retail center, for $7.4 million.
That 40-day close in Houston perfectly illustrates the power of the 1031 shot clock.
Explain the shot clock real quick.
So when an investor sells an asset, they have exactly 45 days to identify a replacement property to defer their capital gains taxes. It is an intense psychological and financial pressure.
Oh, for sure.
Sellers understand this dynamic perfectly. If a buyer comes to the table with an all-cash offer and promises a 40-day closing, the seller will frequently accept a slightly lower purchase price just to lock in that absolute certainty.
Because certainty is the most valuable currency in commercial real estate right now.
Without a doubt.
That makes total sense. But we do need to look at the other side of the ledger. Not all retail is thriving. And the sources contain glaring warnings about discretionary retail and poorly executed experiential concepts.
Yeah, it's not all sunshine.
Right. Even in the grocery space, you have to verify tenant strength. Kroger is closing about 60 underperforming supermarkets. And in the legacy department store sector, Macy's is advancing on its plan for 150 closures.
This is the exact risk of the bifurcated consumer we discussed earlier. You cannot assume an anchor is safe just because they sell food.
Right.
You have to verify store-level sales data to ensure your specific location is highly productive and not just, you know, sitting on some corporate chopping block. Legacy discretionary retail like Macy's continues to face severe structural headwinds because consumers are actively trimming their non-essential budgets.
It's not just legacy brands failing either. The newer retailtainment space is showing real cracks.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Oakwood Public Market in Dripping Springs, right outside Austin, suffered a sudden closure less than a year after it launched.
Under a year. Wow.
Less than a year. They had strong community buzz, but they cited high operating costs and staffing issues. Why does a concept with heavy foot traffic die in under 12 months?
Because the operating model of experiential retail is incredibly fragile.
How so?
Well, high-end food halls and curated markets require specialized staffing, intensive management, and really heavy overhead. They rely on the consumer treating a visit as an event and spending accordingly.
So the moment the vibe shifts.
The moment consumer confidence drops and people decide to cook at home instead of buying a $20 artisanal sandwich, the margins vanish. You have to underrate the strict business reality and overhead of your tenant, not just the aesthetic appeal of the concept.
There is also a fascinating story about real estate displacement risk in the sources. The flagship P. Terry's restaurant in Austin is being forced to close after 10 years because the I-35 infrastructure expansion is going to run directly through their site.
In high-growth states like Texas, infrastructure risk is a major underwriting component.
It's a huge deal.
Population growth demands highway widenings and new interchanges. You have to stress test your site's long-term access, frontage, and municipal overlays. I mean, the most profitable drive-thru in the state will still get bulldozed if the Department of Transportation needs the right-of-way.
The state always wins.
Every time.
Let's talk about the Macy's closures for a second, because this introduces significant co-tenancy risk.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
Right. If a Macy's goes dark in a mall or a large power center, it frequently triggers co-tenancy clauses for the smaller inline shops, allowing them to pay reduced percentage rent or even break their leases entirely. So is a dark box a crisis for landlords, or is it an opportunity?
Well, in a sluggish market, it's a crisis. But in a market like DFW sitting at 95.3% occupancy, a dark box is an exceptional value-add opportunity.
Really? Explain that.
A legacy department store often pays extremely low rent that was locked in from decades ago. When they vacate, the landlord can completely reposition that square footage. We are seeing fitness chains like Crunch and Planet Fitness aggressively backfilling these spaces.
Just totally taking them over.
Yeah, Crunch alone is planning over 100 new openings.
So you basically carve up 100,000 square foot dead zone and turn it into highly active daily use spaces.
Exactly. You bring in a high-end gym, a modern value grocer, and medical retail medtail, like an urgent care clinic or a dental group.
And they pay more rent.
Oh, they pay significantly higher rent per square foot than the outgoing department store. More importantly, they change the property's traffic from weekend browsers to daily visitors. You completely alter the yield profile and drive up the overall valuation of the center.
So it's not a dead mall at all. It's a canvas for daily needs retail.
That's a great way to look at it.
As we wrap up this deep dive, let's distill the core takeaways for Eureka Business Group's audience. First, all cash buyers, specifically those on a 1031 timeline, have a historic advantage right now against finance buyers who are struggling with negative leverage and this hawkish Fed policy.
Absolutely.
Second, necessity-based retail groceries, medical, and discount remains the absolute safest harbor against consumer anxiety.
Right, daily needs.
And third, the DFW market is a structurally tight environment, where identifying shadow-anchored strips and repositioning dark boxes is the clearest path to outsized returns.
The market overwhelmingly rewards speed, certainty of execution, and a strict focus on daily needs tenancy right now. If you bring those elements to the table, the current climate is just uniquely favorable for acquisitions.
Well, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to ponder. The sources note that there is a staggering $2.2 trillion commercial real estate maturity wall looming between now and 2028.
That number is just terrifying.
$2.2 trillion in debt is coming due, and it will need to be refinanced at today's much higher interest rates. If the Federal Reserve refuses to lower rates, will this maturity wall force overleveraged owners into a historic wave of distressed selling? Could we be looking at a scenario where the keys to the American retail landscape are essentially handed over to unlevered, cash-rich private buyers?
I'll tell you this. If that debt comes due while rates remain elevated, the resulting transfer of wealth from levered owners to all-cash buyers will restructure the entire industry for a generation.
It is the ultimate game of musical chairs. And if you are holding cash right now, you are wearing the sneakers. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Remember that Eureka Business Group is here to help you navigate these exact market dynamics, identify those prime DFW retail assets, and lace up your sneakers before the music stops. Keep analyzing, keep exploring, and we will catch you next time.